This is Audible.
A Strange Hymn, The Bargainer, Book 2. Written by Laura Thalassa. Narrated by Susanna Jones. Astrid, for you, the universe. We are all like the bright moon. We still have our darker side. Khalil Gibran. Mighty Nix came, Mighty Nix sought, all that he could of his dark lot. In the deep night his kingdom rose. Beware, great king, of that which grows. Easy to conquer, easy to crown, but even the strongest can be cut down. Raised in the shadows, reared in the night, your child will come and ascend by might. And you, the slain, shall wait and see what other things a soul can be. A body to curse, a body to blame, a body the earth will not yet claim. Beware the mortal beneath your sky. Crush the human who'll see you die. Twice you'll rise, twice you'll fall, lest you can change it all. Or perish by day, perish by dawn, the world believes you're already gone. So darken your heart, my shadow king, and let us see what war will bring. The Prophecy of Gallagher Nix. Chapter 1. Wings. I have wings. The black iridescent feathers glint under the dim lights of Dez's royal chambers, now black, now green, now blue. Wings. I stand in front of one of Dez's gilded mirrors, both horrified and transfixed by the sight. Even folded up, the tops of my wings loom well above my head and the tips brush the back of my bare calves. Of course, wings aren't the only thing different about me. After a particularly nasty skirmish with Carnon, the mad king of fauna, I now have scaly forearms and claw-tipped fingers, too. And those are just the changes you can see. There's nothing, except maybe the wounded look in my eyes, that I have to show for all those parts of me that were altered in different, more fundamental ways. I'd spent the better part of a decade fighting the idea that I was a victim. I'd done a damn fine job of it, too, if I do say so myself, before I came to the other world. And then came Carnon. A small shiver courses through me even now as I remember. All those cleverly crafted layers of armor I wore were shucked away in a week of imprisonment, and I'm not quite sure how to deal with it. To be honest, I really don't want to deal with it. But as bad as I have it, the master of animals got it worse. Dez vaporized the dude so completely that all that's left of him is a bloodstain on the remains of his throne room. Apparently, one does not fuck with the Night King's mate. Mate. That's another thing I've acquired recently. A soulmate. I'm bound to Desmond Flynn, the bargainer, one of the most wanted criminals on Earth and one of the most powerful fae here in the other world. But even that, matehood is more complicated than it appears. I still have so many questions about our bond, like the fact that I never knew I was a soulmate until a few weeks ago. Other supernaturals find this kind of thing out back when they're teenagers and their magic awakens. So why didn't I? There's also the fact that most soulmates can feel the bond that connects them to their mate like it's a physical thing. I place a hand over my heart. I've felt no such thing. All I have is Dez's word that we are soulmates. That and the sweet ache in my bones that calls for him and only him. I drop my hand from my chest. Behind my reflection, stars glitter just beyond the arched windows of Dez's otherworld suite. The hanging lanterns dangle unlit, and the sparkling light captured along the wall sconces have long since dimmed. I'm stuck here in the kingdom of night. I doubt there are all that many supernaturals that would complain about my situation. Mated to a king, forced to live in a palace. But the simple sobering truth is that a girl like me cannot waltz back onto Earth with giant wings protruding from her back. That sort of thing wouldn't go over well. So I'm stuck here, far from my friends. Okay, friend. But in all fairness, temper's got the power and attitude of at least two people. In a place where my ability to glamour, aka seduce, others with my voice is essentially useless. Fairies, as I've learned, cannot be glamoured. My magic is too incompatible with theirs. To be clear, that's not a two-way street. They can still use their powers on me. The bracelet on my wrist is proof enough of that. My eyes return to my wings. My strange, unearthly wings.
You know, staring at them isn't going to make them go away.
I jolt at the sound of Desmond's silky voice. He leans against the wall in a shadowy corner of his dark bedroom, his expression irreverent, as usual. His white blonde hair frames his face, and even now, even when I'm bashful and exposed and oddly ashamed of my own skin, my fingers ache to thread themselves through that soft hair of his and pull him close. He wears nothing but low-slung pants, his muscular torso and sleeve of tattoos on display. My heart quickens at the sight. The two of us stare at each other for a beat. He doesn't make a move to come any closer, though I swear he wants to. I can all but see it in his silver eyes. "I didn't mean to wake you," I say quietly.
"I don't mind being woken,"
he says, his eyes glittering. He doesn't move from his spot. "How long have you been there?" I ask. He crosses his arms over his bare torso, cutting off my view of his pecs.
"Better question, how long have you been there?"
So typical for Dez to answer a question with a question. I turn back to the mirror. I can't sleep. I really can't. It's not the bed, and it's definitely not the man who warms it. Every time I try to flip onto my stomach or my back, I inevitably roll over a wing and wake myself up. There's also the little matter of the sun never rising in this place. The kingdom of night is perpetually cast in darkness as it draws the night across the sky. There will never be a time when the sun glances into this room, so I can never know when exactly to wake up. Dez disappears from his spot against the wall. A split second later, he appears at my back. His lips brush the shell of my ear.
"There are better ways to spend long, sleepless evenings,"
Dez says softly, one of his hands trailing down my arm. My siren stirs at his words, my skin taking on the faintest glow. His lips brush the side of my neck, and even that lightest of touches has my breath hitching. But then I catch sight of my reflection, and I see the wings. The glow leaves my skin in an instant. Dez notices the moment my interest wanes, moving away from me like he was never there. And I hate that. I can feel the distance between us. I don't want him to give me space. I want him to pull me closer, kiss me deeper, make me extinguish this new insecurity I have. "These wings," I begin to explain, but then I stop. Dez comes around to the front of me.
"What about them?"
he asks, blocking my view of the mirror. I lift my chin. "They'd get in the way." He raises an eyebrow.
"In the way of what?"
As if he's unaware of exactly what we're dancing around. "Of playing chess," I say sarcastically. "Of intimacy." Dez stares at me for several seconds, then his mouth slowly curls into a smile. It's a smile full of tricks and mischievous things. He steps in close, only a hair's breadth between our faces.
"Cherub, I assure you, your wings will not be an issue."
His gaze dips to my lips.
"But perhaps your mind would be better put to ease with a demonstration."
At his suggestion, light flares beneath my skin, my siren immediately ready to go. Whatever my insecurities are, she doesn't share them. I look over my shoulder at my wings, and my worries come roaring back. Aren't they a major turnoff? The moment the words leave my lips, I wish I could catch them and shove them back down my throat. The only thing I hate worse than feeling like a victim is airing my insecurities. Normally, all that emotional armor I don hides them, sometimes so deep I forget they're there. But after my ordeal with Carnon, that armor is lying in scattered pieces somewhere around my feet, and I haven't yet had the time or the will to refashion a new set for myself. I'm horribly raw and painfully vulnerable. Dez raises an eyebrow. At his back, his own wings, which I haven't noticed until now, expand. The silver, leathery skin of them pulls taut as they extend to either side of him, blocking out most of the room.
You do realize almost all Fae have wings.
I know they do, but I never have. I hold up a forearm. In the dim light, the golden scales that plate my arm from wrist to elbow shimmer like jewelry. On the tips of each of my fingers, my nails glint black. They're not sharpened at the moment, thanks to meticulously filing them down. But the second my siren gets a little angry, they'll grow back into curving points. How about this? I ask. Do most Fae have this? He clasps my hand in his own.
It doesn't matter one way or another. You are mine.
Dez kisses the palm of my hand, and somehow he manages to make my insecurities feel small and petty. He doesn't release my hand, and I stare at the scales. Will they ever go away? I ask. His grip tightens.
Do you want them to?
I should know that voice by now. I should hear the warning notes in it, the dangerous lilt to it. But I don't, too consumed with my own self-pity. I meet his eyes. Yes. I get that I'm being a poor sport. Rather than making lemonade out of lemons, I'm pretty much cutting open those lemons and squeezing them into my eyes. My heart begins to speed up as he fingers one of the hundreds of beads that still circle my wrist, each one an IOU for a favor I cashed in long ago. His eyes flick to mine.
Truth or dare?
Dez's gaze twinkles as he plays with the bead on my wrist, waiting for my answer. Truth or dare? This is the little game he loves to make out of my repayment plan. To me, it feels less like the game 10-year-old girls play at slumber parties and a whole lot more like Russian roulette with a fully loaded weapon. I stare the bargainer down, his silver eyes both so foreign and so familiar. I don't answer fast enough. He gives my wrist the lightest of squeezes.
Dare,
he says for me. The part of me that enjoys sex and violence quakes with excitement, wanting whatever Dez offers. The rest of me is starting to think I should be scared shitless. This is the same man who's known around these parts as the King of Chaos. Just because we're mates doesn't mean he's going to go easy on me. He's still the same wicked man I met 8 years ago. Dez smiles, the sight almost sinister. A moment later, a pile of leathers fall to the floor next to me. I stare down at them dumbly, not understanding what it is he dared me to. For all I know, I just got royally fucked over. Actually, I'm almost positive I got fucked over.
Suit up,
Dez says, releasing my wrist.
It's time to start your training.
Chapter 2.
How hard is it to fight a warrior king without the use of glamour?
Really freaking hard. The bastard dared me to train with him.
And if that sounds vague, that's because he meant it to be. I don't know what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, or how long I'll be doing it for. All I know is that hours ago, Dez gave me leathers and a sword, and ever since then, he's been systematically nicking those training leathers and swiping my sword out of my hand. Above us, little orbs of light, fairy lights, glitter from the trees arching over the royal courtyard that's doubling as our training grounds. They hover over the gurgling fountain and dot the hedges that surround us. Beyond them, the stars shine like diamonds, brighter and denser than any I've seen on Earth.
Lift your elbow.
Dez says for the millionth time, snapping me back to attention. This is just one of his many instructions.
The strike must start from your shoulder. The arm is merely the follow-through. Keep your center of gravity steady. Nothing but a death blow should make you lose your balance. Fleet-footed, Callie. What you don't have in girth, you must make up for in speed. Your wings are an asset, not a liability. Don't let them slow you down.
Dez comes at me again, and if I wasn't already intimidated by his experience, I would be by the predatory glint in his eye. That's only a good look on him when he's about to sully me. Otherwise, it's plain terrifying. I weakly block one of his strikes, then scramble back. The bargainer follows, a slight grin on his lips, like this is actually enjoyable.
Gah! Training sucks balls.
Big ones. Why are we doing this again? I gasp out.
You know why.
He rolls his wrist, swinging his sword around. Meanwhile, I'm over here, still panting like a dog. That's not an answer.
Your one weapon, your glamour, doesn't work here in the other world, he says, continuing to advance. No mate of mine will be defenseless.
Finally an answer, and damn it, it's a good answer. I don't want to be defenseless either. If only training wasn't so bruising, both for my body and my ego. How long will this task last? I ask, panting as I shuffle away from him. It feels like it's been days since we started.
You told me you wanted to be someone's nightmare,
Dez says.
I'll stop training you once you feel you are.
Teach me again how to be someone's nightmare. I remember the words I said only days ago. I hadn't imagined they'd lead to this. And then the rest of what he's saying registers. Wait. I stop backing up. You mean to tell me this task isn't over when we stop today? Dez rushes me, his blade striking mine with the force of an anvil. For the 100th time, my sword clatters to the ground. And once again, I get trounced. The edge of the bargainer's blade finds my throat a moment later. The two of us stare at each other from across it.
No, Cherub, he says. This is just day one of the task.
Damn it all to hell. I hate training. The skin of my neck brushes the edge of Dez's sword as I speak.
If it were fun, more people would do it,
he responds. I raise my eyebrows. Celibacy isn't all that fun either, but perhaps it would do you some good, I say tartly. His expression brightens with excitement. Only this crazy fairy would find the threat thrilling.
Is that?
Someone behind me clears his throat.
Is now a bad time to introduce myself?
I jolt the new voice, and only Dez's quick movements prevent me from slicing my neck on his weapon. He drops his sword and reluctantly tears his eyes from mine. I swivel around, noticing the outline of a man a few feet away from us, his body cast mostly in shadows. Next to me, the bargainer slides his sword into its scabbard.
Your timing is apt as ever, Malachi.
The fairy steps out of the shadows. The first thing I notice is the man's staggering frame. He and Dez are nearly the same height, and like Dez, he seems to be made entirely of muscle. Seriously, what do they feed these guys? I thought fairies were supposed to be lithe. The second thing I notice is the eye patch covering his left eye. That's just not something you see on Earth. Peeking out from the edges of the eye patch is a thin, deep scar that bisects his eyebrow and cuts into his cheek. His skin is a deep olive color, made all the more striking against his deep brown hair.
I thought I might be interrupting something, at least until the lady mentioned celibacy.
The man, Malachi, laughs as he approaches, something that causes Dez's mouth to quirk.
How the mighty king is finally being brought to his knees.
Malachi's gaze moves from Dez to me, and I see his stride falter as his eyes flick over me.
No wonder you've been hiding her,
he says, stopping in front of us. I glance between the two men, not sure whether I should be offended or not. I'm suddenly painfully aware of my wings. The training leathers I'm sweating through don't help either. He hasn't been hiding me, I say. Self-conscious or not, I haven't come all this way to allow someone to make me feel bad about myself. But based on the way Malachi continues to stare at me, not like I'm a freak, but like I'm a fascinating oil painting, I realize that maybe I let my own insecurities get the better of me. Perhaps a man with an eye patch wouldn't immediately think to degrade another's appearance. Maybe his words were actually meant to be a compliment. How shocking.
Callie, the bargainer says. This is Malachi, Lord of Dreams, my oldest friend.
Friend? My attention turns to Dez, whose expression is guarded. How had I not realized that Dez had friends? Everybody has friends. I've just never heard about his. Not for the first time, I feel like the man next to me is a mirage. I've been so sure I've been seeing him clearly this whole time, but the closer I get, the less apparent that becomes.
Malachi,
Dez continues, his eyes lingering on me for an extra second, like he can hear exactly what I'm thinking.
This is Calypso, my mate.
I get the distinct impression Malachi wants to pull me in for a hug, but instead he takes my hand.
I've been waiting centuries to meet you,
he says, bowing deep enough to press his forehead to the back of my hand. His words cut through all my jumbled thoughts. I give him a quizzical look once he straightens.
Centuries?
He glances at the bargainer.
You haven't told her, Malachi.
Dez cuts in.
What is so pressing that you had to interrupt our training?
He hasn't told me what, I ask Malachi. Malachi flashes Dez a wolfish grin.
Oh, this is going to be fun, I can already tell.
The fairy begins to back away.
Desmond, you have urgent business in the throne room.
The king of the night nods, his attention moving to me.
I'll be there in 5,
he says, his eyes locked on mine.
Bring in a chair for Calypso. She'll be joining us.
Joining Dez? In his throne room? In front of other fairies? Oh, hell no! I put my hands up in protest. Whoa, whoa, whoa! I feel magic settle over me for the second time today, and I know without checking that the bargainer took another bead.
The time for hiding is over.
Chapter 3. I crack my knuckles nervously as the bargainer leads me down the halls of his palace, his hand on my lower back. Above us, the ceilings arch overhead, fitted with painted tiles and starbursts of light sparkle from the sconces that line the walls. The simple bronze circlet Dez wears as a crown currently adorns his head, and his warbands are now visible on his upper arm, the 3 cuffs proof of his valor in war. Like me, he wears training leathers, and I try not to stare too hard at just how good he looks in them. Instead, I glance over my shoulder at Dez's wings. He hasn't put them away all day. In fact, ever since he retrieved me from Carnon's throne room, they've almost constantly been present. Over a week ago, Temper told me that male fairies like to display their wings around their mates. He catches me staring at them, and his eyes shine. Just that look is triggering all sorts of inappropriate responses, and I have to remind myself that this guy forced my cowardly heart to face not one but 2 unpleasant challenges today. Training, and now this. Ahead of us, Malachi and a team of royal aides and black-clad guards stand in front of an innocuous door, clearly waiting for us.
What's the situation?
Dez asks when we make it over to the group.
The last of the fauna leaders sent a message, one of the aides says. He's refusing to give his message to anyone but you.
Just hearing a mention of the fauna fae has my blood running cold. I know it's unfair to judge an entire group of fae based on their twisted leader's actions, but the truth is I didn't just suffer at the hands of Carnon. Every fauna fae who dragged me to and from their king, every one of them that walked by my cell and didn't stop to help, every one of them that aided the madman, they are all to blame.
Very well,
the bargainer says next to me, his voice just as silky as it ever is.
Let's meet the messenger.
I begin to back up because I'm really not ready to face a fauna fae right now, but Dez's firm hand on my back holds me in place. One of the fairies slips through the door and I hear him announce Dez, and then, much to my growing horror, I hear my name announced as well. I'm not sure Dez means to, but his wings flare out, curving around me for several seconds before they fold back up. I feel more than a little ill as the two of us file into the throne room. If I wasn't so distracted by my emotions, I could properly feel awed by the room itself. The ceiling that arches above us is enchanted to look like the night sky. The chamber is lit by two grand bronze chandeliers and several wall sconces, little starbursts of light glowing from each of them. The pale stone walls are intricately carved, and tiny bits of colorful tile cover most of them, making the room look like one grand mosaic. Dasmin's throne room is currently filled with dozens and dozens of fairies that line the walls or peer down from a balcony on the upper level. As soon as they see us, they begin clapping, the sound setting me further on edge. My wings hike up with my nerves, and I have to breathe deeply to calm myself. Dez's throne is made of hammered bronze and fitted with cushions of deep blue velvet. Next to it, someone's brought out a smaller seat made of the same materials. My seat, I realize with a start. Mechanically, I take it, my wings arching over the back of it. This room is a far cry from the Fauna King's throne room, and yet staring down the long expanse of it still brings back unwanted memories. Not to mention that this one is filled with an audience. Only once Dez and I are settled does the applause cease. In the silence that follows, one of the fairies in attendance steps in front of the throne, bowing deeply. "My king, a Fauna messenger is here to see you." The fairy essentially repeats what we've already heard.
"Bring them in,"
Dez says, his voice booming. I slide a glance over to my mate. Back in high school, I used to imagine all the lives he must have lived when he wasn't around me. But I never pictured this. Even after I knew he was a king, it was just too hard to envision the wily bargainer as some benevolent ruler. But right now he wears the role like a second skin. A strange combination of awe and fear washes through me. Awe that for the first time in 8 long years, I'm being let into Dez's world. He's showing me things about himself that I've begged for him to share in the past. But then, there's the fear that accompanies the wonder. The one truly concrete thing I know about my mate is that he's a man made of secrets. And perhaps for the first time, I'm having a certain amount of trepidation when it comes to what exactly those secrets are. At the far end of the room, the arched double doors open, dragging my attention away from Dez. A man with a lion's tail and mane is escorted into the room. Just seeing the Fauna Fae has me squeezing my armrests. One of my jailers had looked similar, and it's dragging my mind back to that cavernous prison with all its horrors. I feel a warm hand take my own. When I glance over at the bargainer, he's staring down our guest, his face set into uncompromising angles even as he gives my hand a squeeze. I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that look. I relax just the slightest. Whatever happens here, Dez won't let that Fauna Fae touch me. I can feel the fierceness of the bargainer's devotion even across the space that divides us. The Fauna Fairy strides down the aisle carrying a large leather bag. He doesn't look intimidated by Dez. If anything, he seems like he's all pent-up aggression, his tail swishing back and forth agitatedly.
"The Fauna Kingdom has a message for the King of Night,"
he announces. Even his voice is aggressive. I would have thought this would frighten me. Everything else about this moment has struck fear into my heart, but seeing this Fauna Fae walk towards Dez, towards me, full of anger rather than repentance, my nails begin to curve back into claws. I can feel my bloodlust rising, the siren whispering all sorts of black thoughts at the back of my mind. Remember what his kind did to us, to those women, He deserves to die. One quick slice across his throat would be enough. I push those thoughts far, far away. The Fauna Fae reaches the end of the aisle, several feet away from the dais Dez and I sit at. In one smooth motion, he throws the bag he carries on the ground in front of him. It lands with a dull, wet thump, and four bloody, severed heads roll out. I nearly fall off my seat. Holy shit! My wings flare out, accidentally bowling over a soldier standing too close. Seriously, what the hell is wrong with this world? Around me, Dez's subjects gasp, their eyes riveted to the sight of all those decapitated heads. And the dead. The dead look as though they're still screaming, their eyes wide and their mouths gaping open. The gasps turn into cries for vengeance, and soldiers are reaching for their weapons. I'm acutely aware that this room is one hot minute away from taking this fauna dude out. The only one not reacting is Dez, and that should worry me deeply. He looks almost bored as he stares down at the severed heads. Dez holds up his hand and the room falls to silence. He sits back against his throne, his gaze moving to the Fauna Fae who looks on challengingly.
"Who are they?"
he asks, his voice echoing throughout the room.
"The last of the Night Kingdom's diplomats staying in our territory,"
the lion-tailed messenger responds.
"Our people demand justice for the murder of our king, the destruction of our palace, and the death of all the Fauna Fae trapped inside the castle when you destroyed it."
The bargainer smiles at that. Holy crap, if I were that messenger, I would have totally just wet myself.
"Refuse us, and the Fauna Fae still left will not rest until every last Night Fae in our realm has been dealt with,"
the messenger says. The crowd hisses its displeasure, and something ripples through the room, something darker and more insidious than the night.
"What sort of justice do you demand?"
Dez asks, leaning forward and placing his chin on his fist.
"We demand that the Night Kingdom pay for the construction of a new palace, and that the current king abdicate his throne."
All right, this guy has some serious cojones, walking into this place and asserting to the Night King's face that he stepped down from his position.
Surely this guy knows his demands won't be taken seriously. Dez stands and you can hear a pin drop. The room is so quiet. He steps down the stairs, his heavy boots echoing throughout the hall. Had I thought he seemed kingly a moment ago, I was sorely mistaken. With his white hair brushed back from his face, his black battle leathers curving around his defined muscles, and his talon-tipped wings neatly tucked at his back, he looks like some dark prince of hell. His ominous footfalls only stop once he stands right in the middle of the carnage. He toes a bloody head. For several seconds, as the room waits with bated breath, all we hear is the slick sound of dead flesh as a severed head rolls under the bargainer's boot.
"You pose a striking offer,"
Dez finally says, still staring down at the remains of his diplomats. The messenger looks resolute, only now his tail has stopped flicking back and forth. I can't imagine what is going on in his head.
"But I'm going to have to decline."
Dez's voice is like a swallow of Johnny Walker after a long day, so smooth you barely feel the burn of it. The Fauna Fae squares his jaw.
"Then expect no."
Power ripples out of Dez. Instantly it brings the messenger to his knees.
"You come here and lay the severed heads of my diplomats at my feet," Dez says.
His hair ripples a little with the force of his words.
"Then you demand justice for a mad king who kidnapped, tortured, and imprisoned soldiers, a man who kidnapped, tortured, and imprisoned my mate."
Suddenly, all eyes are on me. My skin burns at the attention.
"Finally,"
Dez continues staring down at the fairy,
"you threaten to kill my people should I not meet your demands."
The The messenger tries to talk, but Dez's magic keeps his lips sealed. The bargainer begins to circle the Fauna Fae.
Do you even know my subjects? I rule over monsters of your wildest imaginings, creatures made of fairies' deepest fears, and I have their respect.
Dez pauses at the man's back, bending down to whisper into his ear.
Do you know how I've gained their respect?
The messenger glances over his shoulder at the bargainer, his lips still sealed. My heart begins to beat faster and faster. Something bad is about to happen.
I let them feast on my enemies.
The messenger looks rattled, but he's not panicking. Dez straightens.
Bring in the bog.
His order is met with fearful whispers. Fairies in the audience shift nervously. A minute later, a side door opens to the throne room. At first, nothing happens. Then, from the doorway, a shadow slithers over the wall. The fairies nearest it scream and scatter. It seems to expand, growing larger and larger, the shape of it hulking and horned. Heaven help me, from the shape of it alone, it looks like Carnon's mutant cousin. I keep waiting to see the monster that accompanies it when I realize that this is it. It's a shadow, nothing more. Only the longer I stare at it, the more terrible it seems. It might not have any sort of physical presence, but on some deep, primordial level, it terrifies me. It slides down the wall, losing its shape as it pulls against the floor. The audience nearest it are practically trampling each other to get away from it, but it pays them no heed. Instead, it creeps towards the messenger. The Fauna Fae struggles to rise to his feet as the bog comes closer, but whatever magical hold Desmond has over him, it pins him in place. Now the messenger is beginning to show the first signs of panic. My guess is that whatever this bog is, its reputation precedes it. Dez steps away from the fairy.
Wait, wait,
the messenger says as the creature nears him.
Don't go.
This makes Dez's lips quirk, though his eyes are as hard as ever. Cruel Dez. Dark Dez. I'm catching an elusive glimpse of the beast behind the man. The Fauna Fae is still trying to move, but it's like his lower legs are glued to the floor.
I'll make a deal,
he says, his eyes pinned to the shadowy creature heading his way. I'll make a deal. Dez's shoulders stiffen at the temptation, but he ignores the fairy. The creature is only mere feet away.
Please, anything!
For a fairy who had enough courage to threaten a fae king in his own court, he sure is quick to fall apart. I don't know what he was expecting would happen. Dez doesn't bend to other people's wills. He's the force that contorts and crushes them. I've seen it happen time and time again with his clients. The bargainer heads back for his throne, his face steely. His eyes find mine and they flicker as they take me in. That might be the closest he comes to regret in this moment. And then the look is gone and he's made of stone once more. There's a darkness in this man, and I've yet to plumb its depths. The shadow closes the last of the distance to the Fauna Fairy moving over his feet. The messenger's ankles begin to disappear, then his calves. That's about when the screaming starts. Dez mounts the steps to his throne and takes a seat next to me, all while the bog continues to swallow the fairy. I dig my fingernails into my seat as I hear the man's cries. I have every reason to enjoy the justice of this moment, but now that the Fauna Fae looks less like a villain and more like a victim, I find I can't. I don't want to sit here and watch this. It's too inhuman, too fae, too wicked. All at once it becomes too much. I get up, and amongst the screams and the stares, I leave the room. No one stops me. Chapter 4. I stand out on the balcony connected to Dez's royal suite, the night sky glittering above me. After leaving his throne room, I wandered the palace grounds for a bit before eventually finding my way back here.
Far below me, I can make out fairies coming and going across the palace grounds. Beyond them is the city of Somnia. I don't know how long I've been leaning over the railing, watching this terribly foreign world pass me by.
Long enough for me to question just about every life decision that led me here.
Tell me, Cherub, do I scare you?
I glance over my shoulder. Dez stands at the threshold to the balcony, his predatory eyes glittering. He stares at me like I'm the dangerous one. I don't answer right away, instead choosing to simply watch him. He steps out onto the balcony, still wearing, like me, his training leathers from earlier. He appears half wild, the moonlight carving his face into sinister shapes. He looks like he wants to devour my soul. Does he scare me? Yes, I say softly. Despite my words, he comes closer, and I'm glad he does. Scaring me hasn't stopped me from wanting him.
Our relationship was forged on bloodshed and solidified through deception.
I am the dark creature that craves sex and destruction, and he is the king of it. When he gets close enough, he places a hand on the back of my neck and pulls my forehead to his, not kissing me, but simply holding me to him.
Truth,
he says.
Does this change things for you?
I feel his magic delicately wrap itself around my windpipe. His question is vague, which is so unlike him, but nonetheless I understand what he's asking. No, I say, my voice hoarse. Maybe it should change things for me. It feels like I've just conceded a little bit of my soul. But Tez has been collecting pieces of my soul since the night I took my father's life. As far as I'm concerned, he can have it. I know he'll take good care of it. Dez's stance doesn't change, but I swear I feel him relax. He smells like sweat and the sweet night. My terrible king. My mysterious mate. His thumb strokes my cheek, and for several seconds neither of us speak. Cruel Dez. Dark Dez. My Dez. What was that thing? I finally ask.
The bog?
I nod against him. He straightens, pulling away without letting me go.
It's a sentient nightmare. It eats fairies alive, subjecting them to their worst fears as it digests them.
A shudder courses through me at the thought. That's horrible. It's his turn to nod, his face somber.
It is.
And yet it hadn't stopped him from unleashing it on one of his enemies. Even now, he doesn't look regretful. He's a fairy. What did you think you were getting yourself into when you decided to be with him? I run my fingers through my hair, emotionally and physically exhausted. The training leathers I've been wearing all day are sticky and chafing in places they really shouldn't be. I want to go home, I say. I'm tired of my wings and perpetual night. I'm tired of being surrounded by monsters and feeling powerless against them. Most of all, I'm tired of living in a world that doesn't have Netflix. Dez's eyes soften.
I know.
You haven't offered to take me home. This comes out more accusingly than I meant.
You haven't asked.
He responds as smoothly as ever. If I did ask for you to take me home, would you? The bargainer's jaw tightens, and for a second I see something alien in his eyes. Something predatory and very fae-like. And then it vanishes. He nods.
I would.
We both fall silent, and I know he's waiting for me to ask him exactly that, to take me home. If only wanting could make something true. But I can't leave. Not as I am. If Dez dutifully took me back to Earth, I'd still be a human with wings and scales and claws. Where do we go from here? I ask hopelessly. Dez's mouth curves up.
You seem to be under the impression that you don't still owe me a great deal of favors.
There is that.
Or that you happen to be my mate.
There is also that. He takes my hand and leads me back inside his rooms.
But, as far as where we go from here, I'd say for starters that we get you a bath.
I crack my first smile of the evening. Look who's talking. I swear boy sweat is at least twice as stinky as girl sweat. I'm pretty sure it's a scientific fact. Des releases my hand.
Is that an invitation?
He asks, raising an eyebrow. You're the Lord of Secrets. I think you can figure that out for yourself, I say. His eyes brighten with mischief. While he looks at me like I'm the most delicious macaroon he's ever laid eyes on, I reach around back and paw uselessly at the training leathers I wear. For what feels like forever, I've been trying to unfasten the ties that crisscross my back and hold the leather bodice in place, but I can't quite reach it. Des's warm hands brush mine away, turning me around and unlacing the ties. Each graze of fingers feels like a kiss. Suddenly, my heart's thundering all over again, and the humorous moment we were having is replaced by something that smolders like embers over a fire. My bodice loosens, falling to the floor in front of me, the air caressing my exposed torso. Des rotates me back around and places his hand over my pounding heart, as though he's trying to capture the beat of it for himself. His gaze moves to mine.
Cherub, we have a lot of catching up to do.
I feel his words all the way in the pit of my stomach. Love, romance, the whole thing feels like a rabbit hole, and I'm Alice, about to plunge into it. His hand slides to my wrist, and I tense as his fingers roll over my bracelet. What will he ask of me now? More training? Some kinky sex act? Not going to lie, I'm pretty sure I could get behind the latter. And I do mean get behind.
Tell me something about your past, something I don't know.
Of course, the moment I'm actually eager to participate in one of Dez's dares, he blows my mind by asking me a simple question. A second later, I realize that the bargainer's magic doesn't grip me as it usually does. He didn't take a bead. He just wants to know a bit more about myself. As I stand here topless in his chambers. What do you want to know? I bring my hands up, hiding my breasts from him. I aspire one day to shamelessly have topless conversations with Des, but that day isn't today.
How did you and Temper meet?
He asks. That's what he wants to know? Right now? He reads me like a book.
You think I'm concerned about losing an opportunity to make love to you?
Those words go straight to my core. His eyes dip to where I cover my breasts, and he lowers his voice.
I'm not.
I narrow my eyes at his arrogance. He steps forward into my space, and it's all I can do not to edge backwards. Des is still overwhelming, still a force to be reckoned with.
I knew who you were the night I left you, Callie, and I'm learning who you are now. But I want to know about everything that came during those 7 years I lost you.
That has my breath catching as I stare up at him. We are lovers and old friends and strangers all at once. He's absolutely right. There's so much we have to catch up on. Things that no amount of physical intimacy will make up for. And that's what he wants from me. I met Temper's senior year at Peel Academy, I say, my mind jogging back to the final year at my supernatural boarding school. That was a rough period of time. I'd lost Des only months beforehand, and I found myself with no friends and no family. The only thing I had in abundance was heartbreak. It was the first day back, and I wasn't sitting next to anyone in my morality of magic class when she dropped into the seat next to me. And then she started talking to me. She talked to me as though we were already friends and I just hadn't gotten the memo yet. It was the first time since he left that another student tried to befriend me. It doesn't hurt so bad admitting to Des that I was once a social pariah. That he already knows about. As for my friendship with Temper, it was only later that I found out how hard it had been for her to take that seat next to me and put herself out there. She knew enough about me to know I had no friends,
something the two of us had in common. It took me weeks to learn that people avoided Temper even more than they did me, largely because of the type of supernatural she was. Of course, considering my own troubled past, Temper's infamy only made me like her more. Ever since then, I say, we've been inseparable. Talking about Temper only makes me miss her all the more. The last 7 years might have been the pits when it came to my love life, but not when it came to everything else, and that was largely thanks to Temper. She has to be losing her mind right now, wondering where I am. I shove my worries away. How did you meet Malachi? I ask, pivoting the subject from me to him. I'm not even sure Dez will respond. He never answers these things. He stares down at me, standing so close I can feel the heat of his body.
Will you unfasten my leathers?
He asks instead of answering. I deflate at his response. I shouldn't be disappointed. Already Dez has shown me so much more of himself than I ever thought he would. Pressing my lips together, I nod. He turns around, his wicked-looking wings still out. My hands find the ties that secure the leather armor to his back. One by one, I begin to unfasten them.
I met Malachi when I was a teenager.
He begins haltingly, my fingers still for a second.
Back then I had lost my way,
he continues.
I found myself in Barbos, a city of thieves, without a cent to my name.
I bow my head, letting a small smile slip out before I resume unfastening the bindings.
That was around the time I joined the Angels of Small Death,
he says. The gang, I say, remembering the explanation he gave me for his sleeve of tattoos.
Brotherhood,
he corrects over his shoulder. He takes a deep breath.
Malachi was another member. He was several years older than me, but still the closest fairy in age.
I can tell dragging out these memories is hard for him. His mind is a steel trap. Things go in and they don't come out.
Living on the edge like we were,
Dez continues,
brought us close together. He saved my life before and I've saved his.
I unfasten the last of the ties at Dez's back and the leather slides off of him. Just like me, he's bare from the waist up. I guess this is our weird version of show and tell. Show some skin, tell the secret. He turns back around to face me, his chest bare.
He's my brother in every way but blood.
I meet his eyes. It's rare that I catch Dez laid bare like this. Like me, he spent years building armor around himself, and now it's coming off. He's no longer the terrifying king or the slippery bargainer. Right now, he's just my Dez. How long have you known him? I ask. He pauses.
Long enough,
he finally says. I know enough about fairies to know that long enough can just as easily mean centuries as it can decades. And the comment Malachi made earlier.
I've been waiting centuries to meet you.
I tilt my head to the side. You're really freaking old, aren't you? A sly smile creeps along Dez's face.
I can answer that, but it will cost you.
I don't need to buy a favor to know the dude must be ancient. I begin backing away from him, heading towards the bathroom. Rain check, Grandpa. I only have time to see his grin widen, and then he's scooping me up, throwing me over his shoulder.
Naughty thing,
he says, smacking my butt. I shriek, then begin to laugh. No wonder your hair is so white. How many centuries ago did it lose its color? I can feel Dez's rumbly laughter shaking his shoulders.
I'll have you know that it kept its color until the day I met you,
he says. He marches us to the bathroom. As he does so, I feel my boots tug themselves off of my feet, clattering to the ground. My pants and underwear go next. Dez! Now just about every inch of my bare skin is pressed tightly to his.
Callie.
He mimics my tone. What are you doing? His hand caresses my upper thigh.
disrobing my queen.
That stops me completely. Oh, God, his queen. Des, you don't mean that, do you? Because, nope. Nope, nope, nope. I'm just getting used to the idea of there even being an us. Anything more is beyond what I can handle.
It was a turn of phrase, he says smoothly. If you'd rather I call you a scullery maid.
I whack his back, which only makes him laugh again. The sound of his laughter has me relaxing again. Just a turn of phrase. As he carries me, his own pants slide off his hips and down his ankles. Gracefully, he steps out of them. And now we're both naked. Ahead of us, the grand bathtub spigot turns itself on. He steps into the giant tub, setting me carefully on my feet. For a moment, I stare at my soulmate, his face just as painfully lovely as the first time I laid eyes on him, his white hair loose. His crown and war cuffs are gone, and the only remaining adornment he wears is the ink that runs down his arm. Without clothes, Des is all the more appealing, his torso massive, large ropes of muscles cording it. Just as I drink him in, he drinks me in, his eyes moving to my breasts, then downwards to my waist and hips. He steps in close, tilting my chin up.
I want to be good at this, Cherub. At us.
I reach out and run a hand down his sleeve of tattoos, my finger lingering over the tears inked onto his skin. I do too. For several seconds, the only sound is the spray of water filling up the tub we stand in. Then, out of the near silence, Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven comes on, the song filling the room. Just as I look around for the phantom speakers that must be playing the music, I catch sight of a polished wood tray resting to the side of the tub. On it sits a steaming mug of coffee, an espresso, in an impossibly small cup, and a plate of macaroons. It's our usual order from Douglas Cafe. And for whatever reason, that does me in. I take a shaky breath and laugh, though it comes out more like a sob. Stop it, I say, my voice soft and rough all at the same time. But rather than stopping, Des pulls me in close, his pretty, pretty muscles pressed against my soft curves. He leans in, his lips a hair's breadth from mine.
Never.
Chapter 5. Des is a romantic. Ugh. That's so not what my heart needed. It's not like there's any turning back at this point, but still, it wounds my ego a little to know how easily I can be done in by a few thoughtful gestures. Close to an hour after the two of us get in the tub, I step out of it, my stomach full of macaroons and coffee as I dry myself off. I watch Des, wings and all, as he saunters out of the room, a towel wrapped low around his waist. Once he gets to the far side of the bed, his towel drops to the ground, and holy virgins and saints, that backside is everything. I wrap my own towel the best I can around myself, accidentally plucking a few of my feathers in the process, my eyes fixed on the bargainer. I am absolutely creeping on this man right now, and I have zero regrets. He glances over his shoulder at me, his pale hair slicked back. I should be embarrassed that he caught me blatantly ogling him, but his own expression heats at whatever he sees in mine. We still haven't done anything together, naked espresso drinking and macaroon eating aside, and the need to rectify that situation is beginning to grow. I wring out my hair as I pad into his bedroom, the hanging lanterns above us glowing softly. I'm about to head over to the fancy armoire already stocked with a million Fae outfits for me when Des reaches into a dresser drawer near the bed and tosses me a black piece of clothing. I catch it, the material soft beneath my fingertips. What's this? I ask.
A concession prize. It's the next best thing to Earth I can give you.
I furrow my brows. He nods to the garment in my hand, and reluctantly I tear my gaze from his to shake the faded material open.
A huge grin spreads across my face when I see the giant lips and tongue printed across the faded t-shirt. It's one of Dez's vintage Rolling Stones shirts.
That's on loan to you,
he says. On loan, I say, raising my eyebrows. Dez steps into a loose pair of pants.
Just because I love you doesn't mean I'm going to give you one of my most prized possessions.
He just made it official. I now fully intend to keep this shirt. Taking my cue from Dez, I let my towel drop to the ground and drag the shirt over my shoulders. My light mood wipes away the moment the hem of the shirt comes in contact with my wings. I forgot all about them. Now that I have wings, I can't just pull clothing over my shoulders. Before I can consider throwing myself a pity party, the t-shirt's soft material, which was bunched just above my wing joints, now slips down my back as if there were no obstacle in the way, the hem of the shirt falling to mid-thigh. My head snaps up to Dez, who's smirking a little. How did you...
Magic, love.
I reach around my back, feeling for where my wings connect to my back. The edges of the shirt split around my wing bones. I'm so focused on the logistics of Dez's shirt that I fail to see the way he stares at me. It's not until he disappears, reappearing at my side, that I take notice. He fingers the hem of the shirt.
This looks good on you.
I freeze. Dez is all coiled purpose. His eyes flick to mine. We're just moths circling a flame. It's right then that a yawn slips out. Worst timing ever. I'm not tired. I mean, I am. It's been a long day, from waking up early to the hours-long training session to watching a man get eaten by a living nightmare, but I'm not tired enough to miss out on this. Dez's eyes drop to my mouth. Whatever passion took him over a moment before, he tucks it away. I want to cry out when I see him slip on the respectful mask he used to wear back when I was in high school. For all his wicked tendencies, he can be surprisingly chivalrous. He tugs the edge of my shirt.
We're not done with this yet,
he says, his voice still rough with promises of sex. He drags me to bed, and I almost think that the man hasn't been deterred by my yawn. Dez's wings disappear so he can roll on his back. A moment later, he pulls me half onto his chest. The way he holds me... The dude has definitely shelved getting frisky for the moment. I could probably make him reconsider, but damn, there might literally be nothing comfier than being curled up against Dez. Tell me a secret, I whisper.
Another one?
He looks so legitimately put out that I laugh. I can't even remember the last secret he told me. Was it about his friendship with Malachi? Yes, another one, I say. He groans and pulls me tighter.
Fine, but only because I like you.
I smile a little against him. Can't believe asking him actually worked. Dez smooths a hand over my feathers.
The only thing I dislike about your wings is that they hide your ass. And I really like your ass.
The room is silent for all of 3 seconds, and then I can't contain my laugh. Dez, that's not what I meant when I asked for a secret.
And yet you received a secret nonetheless. Consider yourself indulged.
He squeezes my backside for emphasis, and I let out a little shriek which causes him to chuckle. And that rumbly chuckle leads to kissing. Lots and lots of languid, delicious kissing. When I finally break away, I lay my head against his chest. The room falls to silence, the only sound the thump of Dez's heart beneath my ear. I close my eyes. I can get used to this. What a terrifying thought.
For 2 centuries, you've been nothing but a whisper of a possibility,
Dez says, breaking the silence.
And then I met you.
He pauses. Like an entire story begins and ends with that sentence. Like life was one thing before he met me and it became something else afterwards. It's enough to make me ignore the fact that he's all but admitted to being over 2 centuries old.
You were everything I never knew I wanted. You were chaos. You were desperation. You were the most mysterious secret I'd ever come across. Everything about you drew me in. Your innocence, your vulnerability, hell, even your tragic life. You were the most captivating creature I'd ever come across.
My throat works at his words. There's a gravity not just to what he's saying, but that he's saying it at all. I asked for a secret and he gave me a revelation, something that I can hold close to my heart late at night.
7 years apart,
he continues,
and the woman you became was a world away from the girl I met.
He tilts my head so that he can look me in the eye.
That only made me want you more. You were both old and new, familiar and exotic, within reach and forbidden. And I wanted you so badly for so long I was sure it would kill me. And when I look at you even now, especially now, I see one simple truth.
He stops speaking. I sit up a little. What was the truth? In the darkness, I can see him staring back down at me.
You are magic, love.
Chapter 6. There's blood everywhere. In my hair, on my skin, splattered around where I lay. I push my torso up off the ground, glancing around me. No, not this place, not again. I take in the rotting leaves that cover the floor, the dead vines that climb up the walls of the long room, and the chair of bones that looms large amongst it all. Carnon's throne room.
Pretty, pretty bird.
My blood runs cold at the voice at my back. It can't be. The Fauna King is dead.
Do you like your wings?
But that voice. A shiver ripples down my spine. Carnon's voice is deep and rough, just like I remember it. Leaves crunch under his feet as he comes around to my front. First I see his twisting antlers, then his strange, mad eyes and wild hair. God, it is him.
Now you're a beast like the rest of us.
I pinch my eyes shut. He's dead.
You'll never be free,
he says, only Carnon's voice is no longer his own. It's another voice I know all too well. My eyes snap open and I stare at my stepfather, the same man I accidentally killed 8 years ago. Why have these ghosts come back to haunt me? I only have seconds to gape at him before the room darkens. The air shifts to my left, stirring my hair. I glance over, but I might as well be blind. The darkness is complete. On the nape of my neck, I feel someone's breath, so close that they must be leaning over me. But when I spin around and reach out, my hand only grasps air. In the dark, I hear the faint echo of laughter, raising the goose flesh along my arm. In response to my fear, my siren comes out, making my skin glow softly. "Who's there?" I call out.
"Secrets are meant for one soul to keep," a woman's voice rings out, coming from everywhere and nowhere all at once.
"Who are you?"
"He's coming for you."
This time it's a child's voice that speaks from the darkness. "Who?" I say. "Carnon is dead." Laughter echoes all around me, growing louder and louder. In it I can hear the woman's voice, the child's, the Fauna King's, and my stepfather's. I can hear them and so many others laughing at me. All at once it ceases. "Who?" I repeat. The air rumbles like thunder, thickening as some strong magic builds and builds, gathering power. With a crack, a booming voice breaks through the magic.
"Me."
I gasp awake. My wide eyes gaze into Dez's pinched ones. His hands cup my face, his worried gaze searching my expression. That dream felt too real. My stepfather and Carnon are both dead and gone, and yet on nights like tonight, it's as though they never died. I suck in air, my chest rising and falling far too fast. Of course those evil men only starred in a portion of the dream. There were other equally chilling presences calling out to me from the darkness. Intuitively, I know who they belong to.
the sleeping women and their unnatural children. And then there was that final voice. I don't know what to make of it. His brow pinched, Dez kisses me fiercely. As quick as it begins, it's over.
You wouldn't wake,
he says. I shiver. It might have been just a dream, but the truth is that the warrior women still sleep and the male soldiers are still missing. Karnon might be dead, but his work isn't. I stare into Dez's eyes. I want to see the casket children again. For the second time in my life, I willingly go visit the little monsters that the sleeping soldiers gave birth to. I might very well be the stupidest woman out there for seeking them out again.